First of all, I'm just curious to know, what are you hearing on the trail in the run-up to this election as the most important issue to Iowans in the 3rd District, and has it really changed that much?
Well, it's been about the economy most recently, and trade in rural areas, and trade here in more urban areas as well, particularly with manufacturing. And so trade's a big issue. The economy, keeping the economy going at, you know, 4.2% GDP, which is pretty incredible. How do you keep that going? Healthcare, immigration, government accountability, those kind of things.
Have you seen your job change a whole lot since you got to Congress in 2014?
Well, so it's very, very important that you keep your promises. And I tell people what I believe in, what I'm fighting for, a process where I will do that. But it's hard to promise outcomes, and so I don't do that. But I do promise that I'll be in front of anybody and everybody who wants to talk. And so that's why I go to around all the 16 counties every month. Very important that people be heard. They want to be heard. I want to hear them, because when the big issues come up, I want to know where the district is. And, you know, congressional approval ratings at a just above 10%. And some people think that's probably too high. But I want to try to build that trust between the people and those that represent them. So whether it's Democrats or independents or Republicans, I go to every county and get in front of every group and do the town halls, open office hours. It's important.
One thing that I found surprising, I guess, was earlier this month when the president was in Council Bluffs. A lot of times you present yourself as you know, working for people in the district, whether they're Republican or Democratic or independent. And President Donald Trump was on that stage and said, a vote for David is a vote for me. And, you know, the website 538 says that you have a voting record pretty similar to what the president's policies are. In that IPTV debate, you had said that, you know, a vote for me is the vote for people in the 16 counties of the 3rd District. Is that the same thing, a vote for the president? Is that the same thing as a vote for those in the 3rd District?
Well, first of all, we're very welcoming people. And when President Obama came to Iowa, I greeted with him at the airport and spent some time with him. And recently, President Trump came to the district. And so we're welcoming people and greet them. A vote for me is a vote for the people of the 3rd District. And regardless of who the president is or who the Speaker of the House is or the leader of the Senate, I'll work with anybody. I don't always agree with everybody, but I'll work with anybody to solve the problems. And the people of the 3rd District, they're my bosses.
You talked about the economy being something that you're hearing a lot from people within the district. During the state fair, your soapbox speech, you talked about tariffs make you nervous, and you seem to be pretty concerned about some of the Trump administration's trade policies. Have your opinions changed much since the USMCA? Does it feel a lot different than NAFTA? Do farmers here in Iowa really gain as much as the president or certain people say they are?
So, of course, to keep that strong economy moving right along, there's four pillars there that I think need to be addressed. Trade is a big part of that. And the president took an awful big bite out of trade when he was elected. And he told us he was going to. And, you know, it does make me nervous, the tariffs. I don't like tariffs. Tariffs, I see, are attacks on consumers, employers, can hurt employees. Is there some light at the tunnel? I think it's starting to open up, getting NAFTA. Some people call it NAFTA 2.0, the USMCA. It's good for Iowa dairy, can help lift wages in manufacturing, particularly with automobiles for American workers. And so that's important. But equally important as to making sure it's a good deal for Iowans and Iowa workers and consumers is those relationships are very, very important with Canada and Mexico. Now, if we can use those relationships and get some bilateral agreements out there, we just did one with South Korea. Argentina's opened up some market for some Iowa agriculture, the EU as well on soy. Use those relationships in a concerted effort to isolate China together, because it felt like at times when we were kind of alone trying to isolate China, it felt like we were alone and isolating ourselves a bit. But there's power in numbers, and I think China will eventually come to the table. The president is going to meet with President Xi at the G20 summit. That's important. You got to sit down and start hammering this out. But the administration has admitted in the sense that it has kind of hurt America, particularly agriculture, because of the retaliation. And so there's that mitigation plan that was put out of $12 billion. farmers don't want it. They want markets. They want trade, but they may need it at this time. I hope it's the only mitigation plan out there.
And this was a president who ran on blowing up NAFTA, and, so he, now we're calling it NAFTA 2.0. So, I mean, it didn't change a ton.
It was better than it was before. Yeah, he wasn't going to settle, and nor should we settle for anything less. USMCA is how the administration likes to term it, but the street slang is NAFTA 2.0.
There you go. I'm curious, too. The United Nations recently put out climate change reports showing that our window is shrinking for doing something to combat climate change. Do you believe that climate change is real?
I believe the climate is changing. And I tell you what, the experts on this, to me, in a lot of ways, I read studies and are the farmers. I mean, they know better than anyone because their livelihood depends on the climate, and they tell me what's going on. We've seen, you know, longer, rainier springs, drier, hotter summers, and we've just recently had a whole lot of rain, although it's a little nicer now for the crops to dry out and bring that in. But, you know, if there's going to be agreements when it comes to climate globally with other countries, I think it should be a treaty. I think, you know, you should have members of Congress vote on these things where there's accountability. But as all this goes on, I'm just continuing to fight for renewable fuels, clean energy, whether it's wind, solar, geothermal, you know, E15. And then I'm equally as concerned as well about water and soil conservation and health. And that's why I've introduced legislation regarding that. And fortunate to have a portion of that into the farm bill that's being negotiated right now.
So, should we be acting much? Well, first of all, was it right to pull out of the Paris Agreement? Was it right for the president to do that?
Well, it wasn't enforceable, and I had some real issues with it. And, you know, we don't have to be in an agreement to keep doing things that we're doing because we have a lot cleaner economy with technology and practices than a lot of other countries out there. I had some real concerns out there if we were going to be paying for China and India's pollution, while they really didn't have that much of the enforcement levels as there probably should be on other countries, if we were going to have to adhere to that and then pay for theirs.
Do you think something can get done on climate change with as much money is involved in politics? I mean, there's a lot of influence from fossil fuel in this debate, and there's been conversations about not being able to get something done because it is such a political fight.
Well, we've seen recently that regardless of what, you know, some of those big industries want out there and try to use their money for as leverage possibly for influence, such as the oil industry, we've been pushing hard for E15 year-round.
This is the ethanol with the 15% blend.
Sure. Yep, in a bipartisan way. And fortunately, the president kept that promise, and that went through. And that'll really help not only just, I think, our environment, but as well as our economy as well, as making sure that we can be as energy independent as we can and not be influenced on foreign oil.
Looking at healthcare, you've talked about in your ads protecting pre-existing conditions. You had introduced an amendment in the AHCA, which eventually went by the wayside. I'm curious, to protect people with pre-existing conditions now, the Affordable Care Act, that's still, you know, the law of the land.
Yes.
Is it right to continue trying to dismantle the Affordable Care Act when there are safeguards put in place there for people with pre-existing conditions?
Well, I've always said that we need to fix health care. And there are some things within the Affordable Care Act, some people call it Obamacare, President Obama calls it that, that should be kept, like no caps, making sure that people up to the age of 26 can stay on their parents' corporate plan or group plan. As well, making sure that we protect those with pre-existing conditions. The pre-existing conditions issue is a personal issue for me and so many Iowans. It's a bipartisan issue to want to make sure that we protect those with pre-existing conditions. And I did offer an amendment with some colleagues. It was accepted. It made sure that insurance companies couldn't discriminate against those who had pre-existing conditions and not accept them and give them coverage. Two, that they couldn't price them differently. Three, that if a state got a waiver from the Affordable Care Act, that they had protect those with pre-existing conditions. And fourth, if there are those who lost their coverage for any reason with pre-existing conditions, that there's a fund there to help pay for that. And so it's important to me, and right now as well, you know, there's some court cases going on. I would like there to be severability in that and keep those protections for those with pre-existing conditions.
At the state level, and I know you're a federal guy, but at the state level, the Farm Bureau plan that came forward in the state legislature, it could exclude or charge more for people with pre-existing conditions. Was this the right call to do this?
Well, I think it's important that states have as much flexibility as they can, because what we're seeing right now, because of the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, is premiums have gone through the roof, deductibles as well. And there needs to be some options out there. So I'm all for states having those experiments to do what they can do to try to give people more coverage. This will give people more coverage. It will accept, they say, those with pre-existing conditions. Maybe not all of them, so there's not really that mandate on there. But it's important to give states flexibility. And I'm always going to, at least at the federal level, fight for those with pre-existing conditions on any kind of federal role that there is in healthcare.
So even that the state insurance commissioner, he or she won't be regulating it at the state level, but it still seems like something that states should have the call to do, is what I'm hearing you say?
I'd like state flexibility in this, yeah. And then at the federal level, I'll be fighting for pre-existing condition protections.
I'm curious, what do you see when, you know, there's been a lot of talk, especially in the state recently, about immigration?
Sure.
When you're talking with people in this district and you as a congressman, what do you see as the biggest issues involving immigration in this country?
Wow. There's so many different ways to look at this and things that people are talking about. One is just a reminder that we're a very welcoming society. I'm a sixth-generation Iowan. We are that shining city on the hill where so many people around the world want to come here. But there's a right way to come here and a wrong way to come here. We are a nation of laws. We certainly need to make sure that we're reforming our current system, because 40% of those who are here illegally, they just overstay their visa, and the bureaucracy is unable to keep up with the amount of people that come and the ways, and when they expire, how to keep track of that. Two, we need just to make sure that we protect our borders. We're very cognizant of other nations and their borders and their ability to want to protect their borders. There's nothing wrong with being a sovereign country and wanting to do that. You can still be welcoming at the same time. I think it's important to secure our borders, not just at the southern border, the northern border, our seaports, our airports as well. And so I've been down to the border around Texas and Arizona and California. There's different needs in different places on ways to secure the border. In California, you're going to need more closer to San Diego, more Coast Guard, more fencing around where Tijuana is across the border. In Arizona, you're going to need drones, unmanned aerial vehicles. You're going to need more border patrol on horseback. You're going to need some wall portions around in Texas, around McAllen, Texas, or some levees and that kind of thing. Different needs in different places. I've never been one for a wall from the Gulf of Mexico to San Diego, however. And then when it comes to deferred action and childhood arrivals, Dreamers, those kids who came over at no fault of their own when they were children, I voted. We had a vote earlier this year to give them a pathway to citizenship, because most, if not all of them, I can't speak for everybody, but really kind of see themselves as Americans, because it's all they really know. And they wouldn't know what to do if they were deported or sent away. And many of them, some are in our military, in our schools, creating small businesses, those kind of things.
Is it politically feasible with the current president to get some kind of guest worker program implemented in the country so that you can fill like ag labor roles here, ag labor jobs in the state of Iowa, where that's the workforce, a lot of those workers are immigrants?
2.5% unemployment rate in Iowa, and just under 4% nationally. You know, we need workers. And so I voted as well earlier this year for an agriculture H-2C visa program to bring in workers. But there's many other areas out there in our economy and industries that need help, where jobs need to be filled. And so we should look at those sectors as well, whether they're high-tech visas, H-1Bs, or trades and apprenticeships, because we're doing a lot of developing and constructing around, and we could probably do more, but we don't have the workers. So on policy, I think it's good policy, and the politics will follow that.
But can you do it when the president speaks very divisively about immigration?
I'm going to keep pushing it. I think on both sides of the aisle, we can do this. Part of the problem is when it comes to these immigration bills, I wish they were just more narrowly focused, which was just be a guest worker program or securing the border, two different bills. But immigration bills get introduced. They start getting amended, and the text of the bills get bigger and bigger. And people are looking for perfection in these bills, and perfection can be the enemy of good sometimes. And I like a narrower focus, but I want to advance the ball. I think it's important to do that. Not every bill is perfect, and get something moving because people are demanding it on both sides, and it's a real need.
Switching topics here, it's becoming more and more common that we hear about mass shootings in America, in schools, movie theaters, and it seems to play out the same. The debate comes up, and then it goes away, and fingers get pointed at Congress. What can Congress do to pass some kind of measure to get more public safety and gun control in the country, or is it where it needs to be?
I think we need to do more, and we have done things this year. Particularly, we passed the Stop School Violence Act, which is a bill that provided funding for schools should they want to harden their facilities, put cameras in, or metal detectors, or panic buttons, as well as it provided funding for mental health services as well, and counseling services, which are very, very important. That passed. I voted for it. Was signed into law. Secondly, the background check system, the National Incident Background Check System, had holes in it. It wasn't being followed. It wasn't being enforced. And so we put measures in there to make sure that states were making those reports to the background check system and making sure that, you know, people didn't fall through the cracks and then do awful things out there. Third, when it comes to bump stocks, which is something that a lot of people hadn't heard of until the Las Vegas shooting, right away I came out and said those need to be off the market and banned. I voted to ban those, and the president issued an executive order on that as well. Recently, you know, here in Des Moines, I helped, but I give full credit to the Des Moines Police Department to get that National Integrated Ballistic Information Network money and system into play, and it's been effective so far. And as well, we also hear about many times after these shootings that the people who did those had mental health issues. Now, I don't want to stigmatize everybody with a mental health issue, because everybody with a mental health issue is not going to be a shooter and do such things as what some have done. But we learn about it after the fact, and we say to ourselves, why couldn't we get in front of that? And so I introduced earlier this year a bill, bipartisan, to provide funding to states to create an authorization program to make sure that, let's say you're a parent, and you have a child, and that child is exhibiting some pretty nefarious behavior on social media, or saying things, or acting in a strange manner and inappropriately, that shows that they're a danger to themselves and a danger to others. Well, you can go to a court, and you can make sure that there's an adjudicated process with due process, evidentiary standards, to have their Second Amendment right taken away in a court of law. And so that's being done in about 5 states right now. But me and my colleagues in a bipartisan way thought it was important to try to encourage that, making sure that we can get weapons out of the hands of those with those mental health issues, get them out of their hands, but at the same time securing constitutional rights by going through the court system. But these shootings are awful. They break our hearts. We wake up and we just pray that these things aren't on the news again. I mean, we think about the impact of our communities, my nieces and nephews, the children of those listening right now and grandchildren. There's evil in our society. I wish we could legislate it away. I don't know how to, but until then, we have those measures that I just mentioned can be helpful.
Has there been anything, as you've been on the campaign trail this time, that's surprised you, different than other times when you've run for this seat?
There's a lot of passion out there, that's for sure. And I love passion. It's important. I always encourage people that if you don't like what's going on, speak up, get involved, run for an office, whether it's at the local level to the federal level.
So you're hearing more from people that might be angry with you, or what kind of passion?
It's passion on both sides.
Okay.
I mean, this is a purple district. And so I make myself as accessible as I can. So you're going to hear all those voices. I just would like a little more civility out there from all sides. And I've always vowed to not be one of those that at least that you hear or see on talk radio, certainly not this station, okay, or on cable television. where people are yelling on the left and the right and calling each other names. That doesn't get you anywhere. That just raises the vitriol out there. I'm wired differently, and I know that those people that do that, though, they are not invited to the table solutions, and I'm a solutions-oriented person. And if I were to do that and was ostracized from the table, I would not be representing the 700,000-plus people in the 3rd District. I'd be leaving them hanging out to dry, and I'm not going to do that.
Is there anything that your Democratic opponent, Cindy Axne, has talked about on the trail that you think is a great idea that you would want to take to Washington if you get reelected?
Well, we're always talking about government efficiencies, and I appreciate my opponent Cindy's service at the state, and it's admirable public service, and always looking for ways to cut the fat out of government and get rid of waste, fraud, abuse, and mismanagement. But there are some things as well that she said that out there on the trail that just plain old aren't true that she said about me. And I've just demonstrated my support on pre-existing condition protections for people. There's a record there, and I'm proud of it. And there's more that I could talk about on that issue. As well, I see commercials and hear them about Republicans wanting to decimate Social Security, Medicare. Not true at all. Nobody wants to do that. We need to save Social Security, Medicare, not cut benefits, and make sure that promise is kept. And I'll always work to keep that promise between the people and the federal government, because those benefits are theirs, are the people's, and they need to be there.
Recently, the Senate Majority Leader had said something to the effect of the reason the deficit is ballooning the way that it is because of things like Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and not the Republican tax cut. Do you agree with that statement?
Well, I'd know that 80% of every dollar at the federal level is what they call mandatory spending. So it's Social Security, Medicare, interest on the debt, and probably some other programs. And we need to make sure that the Social Security and Medicare are sustained. At the discretionary level, your departments and agencies out there, you could get rid of many of those and probably not really make a dent in the debt and deficit. We need to grow the economy. We're getting record-breaking revenues coming in at the federal and state level, but we got to control spending. We got to modernize and strengthen Social Security, Medicare, and keep that promise. We need to do what happened back in the 80s with Republican President Ronald Reagan and Democrat Speaker of the House Tip O'Neill, where they got together and said, there's a problem here with Social Security or Medicare, and we need to make sure that that promise is kept to the people and that they continue. And so this has to be done in a bipartisan manner. There's not going to be a partisan approach on this issue. It's got to be done in a transparent manner. It's also got to be done in a manner where it's not just Congress, but the other end of Pennsylvania Avenue at the table as well to get this done.
All right. Congressman David Young, thank you.
Hey, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.